Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Hi, and welcome back. Today, we're diving into one of the most ubiquitous words in tech media, and that's resilience. In 2025, resilience is like on my top 10 list of buzzwords of the moment. But the question is like, okay, so what does that actually mean for digital identity systems? And kind of more importantly, who's paying for it? Well, unfortunately, the answer to what it means is not as simple as, well, it means you build flexible systems. Because flexibility, as it turns out, is expensive. So let's talk about what resilience in identity actually looks like and why our current standards might not be as prepared as we think they should be. So let's start with the easy to say, hard to do part, which is that resilience takes flexibility and flexibility costs money. Most modern identity standards include language that imply adaptability. I mean, think along the lines of pluggable trust frameworks, support from multiple issuers, credential revocation paths, selective disclosure. On paper, these features signal architectural flexibility, and that's great. But in practice, most implementers don't have the time, budget, or the political capital to do all that much with flexibility. They build for what's required today, but not what might break tomorrow. I mean, take a typical enterprise rolling out a new login flow. Maybe the spec they're following recommends fallback mechanisms for when an identity provider is unavailable. Maybe it allows for multiple credential formats or wallet types. But the reality in terms of what they're going to implement is that there's a product deadline or there's an audit looming, and there's a whole pile of technical debt that they have to wade through. And at that moment, resilience isn't the priority, you know, shipping something is, which means fallback support might get cut, delegation flows will get deferred, and 3 years later, when the upstream identity provider goes offline during a regional outage, everyone scrambles to patch what could have been prevented if the team had been resourced enough to plan for resilience. Now, I talked about some of this earlier in a blog series on centralization and decentralization, and what I argued there, and what's still true, is that resilience means being able to shift between models as conditions change. It's not just having one architecture, but adapting between them as needed. And that sounds awesome, doesn't it? But every shift point needs governance, testing, and maintenance, and that does cost real money, and that's the part that standards rarely talk about. So let's take a moment and talk about things like trust anchors. Now, most identity standards are written under the assumption that trust sources, things like certificate authorities, federation metadata, or DID resolution endpoints are stable. And honestly, that's not unreasonable. The internet only works because we accept certain foundational assumptions, like DNS will resolve, certificates will validate, turtles will be all the way down. But here's the thing, those turtles, they do wobble a little bit. When a government deprecates a trust framework, or when a major federation host drops support, or when a registry becomes unmaintained, what happens to the systems that depend on them? Most specs don't say. They assume best case scenario, online, accessible, well-maintained infrastructure. They offer what we would refer to as may clauses, not fallback flows. And in a stable world, that's totally fine. But the world isn't stable. And from a standards perspective, we really should be designing for volatility, not pretending it's a rare outcome. Let's take OpenID Connect Federation as an example. So it defines trust chains that work beautifully until a key link becomes unavailable. SAML Federation metadata assumes constant availability, but provides little help if your metadata URL becomes unreachable. Even the W3C's verifiable credentials rely on resolvable identifiers and public keys that aren't always guaranteed to stick around long term. And that's not to say those standards are bad. They're doing some really, really important lifting when it comes to trust on the internet. But I do want to say that we need to get better at defining, well, what happens when things break, because they will. So now let's shift to a different kind of fragility, and that's the absence of support for delegation. Now, we've known for years that delegation is a hard but necessary part of identity. Parents act on behalf of children, executive delegates access to assistance, healthcare proxies, power of attorneys, even just letting your spouse renew your insurance online. All of these are real-world identity scenarios. But now we add AI agents to the mix, and today we're seeing various AI tools acting on users' behalf, booking appointments, filling out forms, accessing data, and that means credentials issued to humans are increasingly being shared with non-humans. And yet, most identity systems have no consistent way to handle that, no built-in method for expressing on behalf of, no standard way to verify scope, consent, or context of use. We're back to trusting the front-end implementation, or worse, we're assuming that users won't do anything unexpected. Initiatives like the User Managed Access, or UMA, did try to address this, especially for non-human identity. But where these are niche efforts, they're important, but far from mainstream. The real issue is that we didn't prioritize this when we should have, and now we're trying to retrofit delegation models into systems that weren't designed to handle multi-actor flows or AI intermediaries. From a resilience standpoint, that's a problem, because without delegation, our identity systems can't safely scale. And if they can't scale, they can't survive the way identity is evolving. So one of the more interesting developments in recent months has been the renewed focus on digital wallets and the recognition that not all wallets are created equal. Now, there's ongoing discussion right now in the W3C's Federated Identity Working Group that's focused on the Digital Credentials API. And that's issue 246 for those people following along with the DC API work. That issue is about how different wallet types should be treated by browsers or operating systems. For example, should a government-issued wallet be allowed to control who can verify its credentials? Or should the browser step in and enforce a uniform model for all wallets? It's not actually a very simple question at all. Government wallets may come with a very strong policy and assurance requirement. Enterprise or social wallets may be more flexible, but they may also be less trusted by the platform. The risk profile varies, as does the desired level of control. So who gets to decide? Is it the wallet, the operating system, the browser, the user? When the browser mediates everything, then the infrastructure starts to shape governance, intentionally or otherwise. And when that happens, we're no longer in any kind of neutral territory. If a standard wallet interaction model only works on platform A, but not platform B, then we're baking in fragility to our digital identity systems. We're creating gatekeepers and locking out diversity, not just in implementation, but in governance models too. So resilience here isn't just about failover or offline support. It's about making space for multiple governance regimes to coexist, even if they conflict. And that's something standards need to support explicitly, not just kind of hope it will work itself out because it's a hard problem. So let's wrap up with a tension I see all the time in standards work, and that is measuring adoption as opposed to measuring adaptability, right? We tend to define a successful standard by how widely it's adopted, and that is entirely reasonable. If no one implements your spec, it doesn't matter how flexible or innovative it is. But adoption doesn't say anything at all about the resilience of it. A brittle standard may be widely deployed, but still collapse when the environment changes, when a trust anchor is lost, when a usage pattern shifts, or when something unexpected happens. On the other hand, a highly adaptable standard that never gets adopted remains a very clever theory, but it's not actually helping. So I'm not suggesting either or here. I think we need to actually figure out how to measure for both adaption and adaptability. If we want our identity systems to survive real-world disruption, our standards need to balance those two goals a little bit more explicitly, I think, not optimizing for one, adoption usually, at the expense of the other. Sounds lovely. How do we get there from here? Well, for starters, we might need more people in standards work who actually understand risk, not just in terms of threat modeling, but in terms of governance fragility, trust volatility, and market pressure. Risk-aware standards, they're They're not designed to be paranoid. They're designed to be durable. So what does digital identity resilience require, right? It requires flexibility, absolutely, but not as an afterthought. It requires fallback paths and pluralism in design, not just best case assumptions. It requires acknowledging the cost of preparedness and deciding when and where to pay it. Most of all, it requires standards that don't assume the world will cooperate forever. Doesn't mean we need to throw out what we built, but it does mean we need to think a little harder about what breaks when things shift and what kind of resilience is truly worth investing in. With that, thanks for listening in. I hope this episode got you thinking. I would love to hear from you. Drop a note on LinkedIn if you enjoyed this, and I look forward to doing this again for the next episode. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.